WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. After 20 years on the New York City police force, working as an undercover agent, homicide detective, helicopter pilot, and heavy weapons instructor, Richard Rosenthal gave up big city police work. Since 1990, he's been the chief of police in Wellfleet, a beautiful village on Cape Cod, populated with fishermen and people who have given up city life. In the summer, they share their town with vacationers. Rosenthal made another big change in his life. He started to write. He has several published novels and nonfiction books about police work. His new book, Rookie Cop, is a memoir about his first assignment on the NYPD. In 1969, just before he was to be sworn in as a cop, he was told that he would work undercover to infiltrate the Jewish Defense League, the extremist militant group led by Rabbi Meir Kahane that was arming itself against everyone it perceived as enemies of the Jewish people. In order to avoid blowing his cover, Rosenthal had to lie to his friends and tell them that he'd decided not to become a cop. I asked him what he did tell them.
I was fortunate in that I didn't have that many friends in the area. I had just come out of 4 years of military intelligence, having served in the Air Force as a Russian language specialist. I spent about a year at a local school in New Jersey. My parents had moved there from Brooklyn some years earlier. And so when I joined the NYPD, I really didn't know anyone in the New York City area. However, when I was first interviewed for the position of undercover officer, they made it quite clear that I was to tell people I was no longer interested in being a New York City police officer. And in fact, only perhaps half a dozen detectives, my parents, my sister, and my wife, were the only people who knew that I was in fact a police officer in New York City.
What do you think would have happened to you if your cover was blown?
I could have gotten into some real trouble. Understand that when I was out in the field, I did not have any backup. That would not have been possible. My assignment was a deep undercover intelligence gathering assignment. Now, on TV and in the media, you read about police intelligence or undercover officers. What that generally refers to are individuals who go to a police bureau, leave their shield and ID in a drawer, go out, do whatever they're doing, come back, pick up their shield and ID, and then go home for the day. In my case, I was basically on the job 24 hours a day. As I had no police identification, there was no way to know what my job was as a police officer. In fact, my cover was that of a taxi driver and a part-time student at Brooklyn College. But it was a very different kind of intelligence gathering task than most police officers would ever come near.
What were some of the most dangerous things you found out about that the Jewish Defense League was up to?
Well, within 5 months of my entering the organization and through a series of lucky chances and serendipity, they put me in charge of their weapons, and they had over 100 assorted firearms, handguns, rifles, shotguns, plus quite a bit of bomb-making equipment. And when I first became, I was put in charge of their weapons and the training of their personnel, we didn't know how to make bombs. And so I think one of the most dangerous parts of my task was when I hung around these people, when they were fiddling around with the various chemicals, trying to get something to explode, and ultimately, when we succeeded making a viable a couple of explosive devices, I was told by members of the bomb squad that the way they were going about making these devices should have caused them to blow up right there.
Right in your faces?
Yes, and they were these were formidable devices. These were rather large pipes capped at both ends with very powerful chemicals inside. And when we did detonate them, they did some horrific damage to the test objects that we set them off by.
So what was the outcome of your mission?
Well, I was under for about 2 years. And ultimately, I went before a federal grand jury. And a series of indictments came down on the key players within the Jewish Defense League. Arrests were made, and ultimately, for complicated reasons, which I'd be pleased to go into, a deal was struck with the leadership of the JDL, and they surrendered their firearms, their bomb-making equipment, a case of dynamite, and I basically disappeared for a few months and then went to the police academy some months after that.
What was it like to become a cop in a uniform after starting your career undercover?
Surrealistic. The undercover assignment was rather special in that I had a tremendous amount of responsibility. I had a very successful mission. I had virtually no oversight. And now I went back into the unwashed masses, as it were, as a police officer. I entered the academy not as a probationary officer because I was well beyond that time frame. So I wore a blue uniform while the probationary officers wore gray. As an aside, another half dozen or so undercovers surfaced at about the same time. And so I was basically going to the academy with members of the Black Panthers, the Students for a Democratic Society, Communist Party, and I believe the Young Lords. It was quite an interesting and eclectic luncheon group we had.
I'm interested in the fact that you retired from the New York City Police, I think it was in 1990, and made the decision to move to a smaller town. You became the chief of police in Wellfleet on Cape Cod.
Yes.
in New England. And it's hard to imagine a bigger shift from, you know, from this huge city with a lot of violence in it to a small town that has a lot of tourists in the summer and vacationers. But it's a small, lovely, quiet, peaceful town for the most part.
Oh, you don't know what's underbelly. No, I'm only kidding. It's very nice. In fact, it was a very deliberate move on my part. I was coming up to my 20th year in the NYPD. I made a conscious decision that I was getting a bit tired of the Machiavellian goings-on at the upper echelons of the NYPD. I wanted to have my own sandbox to play in, if you will. I also wanted to continue my professional writing. So right on my resume, I believe I wrote something to the effect of my goal was to take charge of a low population density police department and continue professional writing. So in fact, I accomplished my goal. It was simply a matter of chance that I secured the position in Wellfleet. I had never been to Cape Cod prior to going for my oral interview there. And I just happened to have stumbled upon one of the most beautiful Cape Cod towns that there are. Which is 65% or 66% of the property of Wellfleet is owned by the National Park Service, so it will stay pristine forever. And we have a lovely bay on one end and the Atlantic Ocean on the other, and it's a lovely, lovely place to be. So both my wife and I are very pleased that this decision was made, and I've been there for almost 11 years now.
How big is the Wellfleet police force that you watch over now?
My year-round size is approximately 13 sworn officers plus a number of dispatchers. And
no, excuse me, I feel like I have to laugh. It's so small.
It's great. I'd run it like a detective squad. My first 12 years in the NYPD, I was a detective, and I was used to how detective squads function. They tended to be less formal, less structured, and it was almost a family relationship. So here I am in an organization that's very much similar to a detective squad in both its size and its responsibilities, because detectives, by and large, have to deal with perceptions of problems, and they've got to placate people. Yes, they do solve crimes. That's one of their functions, but they also have a public relations function. And very much in Wellfleet, what we do is we can't always accomplish a specific goal, but we can make people feel more comfortable that their problems are being addressed, that we'll do the best we can to deal with whatever situation arises. And so I guess you'd have to say that I run my police department very much the way I'm used to a New York City detective squad as being run. A little less formal. My door is always open. Any officer can come in. We can sit down. We can chat. I have regular meetings with people. I listen to ideas, and because I've got some pretty bright guys working for me and women. And it's just a nice, I try to keep it to be a nice atmosphere within the department, because I think that ultimately works its way down to how the officers interact with citizens.
Richard Rosenthal is my guest. He spent 20 years as a cop on the New York City force, and now he's the chief of police in Wellfleet on Cape Cod. He's also an author, and his latest book is called Rookie Cop, Deep Undercover, in the Jewish Defense League, and this is about the very first assignment he ever had. Let's take a short break here, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Richard Rosenthal, author of the new memoir, Rookie Cop. In 1990, after 20 years with the NYPD, he became the chief of police in Wellfleet, a small town on Cape Cod in New England. So what are the typical crimes that you see on a daily or weekly basis? And how do they vary during the summer season and during the rest of the year?
In the summer, we have many families come. So we don't have, say, crimes of violence. I've never known of a stranger assault in Wellfleet where a person who didn't know another person either assaulted, mugged, or somehow did something that was so inappropriate as to really raise one's eyebrows. It's quite a safe place to be. Having said that, we have had some situations where we have family matters that have to be dealt with. We'll have neighbor disputes. They can cause all kinds of problems because, frankly, the people live next to each other and it just doesn't go away. And we'll have the more mundane problems of parking matters, skateboarders skateboarding in inappropriate locations. Sometimes children do malicious acts of damage. Nothing much more exciting than that.
Yeah, I'm wondering how the lack of crime affects how people live. I mean, for instance, in New York, you have many bolts on your door. you have, you know, a club on your car and an alarm system. You don't walk around at night if you can avoid it. You know what hours is comparatively safe to take the subway. I mean, in some ways, your whole life is regulated by when it's safe to do certain things and how to do certain things safely. What about in Wellfleet?
Well, we don't lock our house. My car is never locked. I know many people in town don't lock their houses. We have something called a reassurance program where a person who is coming on in age either calls us in the morning. If we can't contact them by 10 o'clock, we go out and see how they are. And I would say about 80% of the homes that we go to are unlocked.
I'm wondering if you feel you're... opinion about human nature has changed since living in the small town of Wellfleet compared to how you felt about people living in New York City when you were on the police force there?
I find people to be remarkably similar. I find that as a species, we tend to be terribly xenophobic, regrettably tribal. We like to find differences so that we can distinguish one group from another. Protect ourselves from the other groups. We're just so resistant to diversity. It's really remarkable. In Wellfleet, though, there seems to be less of that kind of acrimony. Groups tend to function a bit more smoothly together, and it seems to be a pleasant. I think it's a pleasant environment for people to grow up and live in and. Frankly, it's idyllic as far as I'm concerned because really anyone could walk the streets any time of the day or night. They won't be molested by anyone. And it's about as safe a location as you can find in the world.
I want to ask you from your point of view about a controversy that was written up in a Cape Cod newspaper. This was something that happened earlier this year. An African student in Wellfleet was stopped on a bike path, I think for looking suspicious. And he thought that he was being stopped and that he had a gun pointed at him for racist reasons. What's the story from your perspective?
That was a holiday day. I was working that day. I can just tell you the story from my perspective. I was sitting in my office doing some paperwork, and I see a sergeant of mine running out of the office and happens to be an African-American sergeant. And I asked Frank what he was doing, and he said there was a pursuit going on at the bike path. So I left with Frank. I jumped into my car. Frank jumped into his. He was ahead of me. And Frank took the bike path. I stayed on Route 6, and the officer who first saw this young man was attempting to find him again as the young man had run from him. I ultimately found the young man as he was crossing Route 6, and I challenged him. He just looked at me. I challenged him again. He started coming toward me. I took my gun out when he jammed his hand in his right-hand pocket, which was a very, very bad thing to do. Turns out he had a Walkman on, which I didn't see. Ultimately,
and he was trying to turn the Walkman off.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know that. I don't have a crystal ball.
Right.
At any rate, according to the officer who did the initial stop, he saw this fellow walking. He'd seen the fellow earlier that day, nothing unusual. But when he saw him walking down the bike path, he had disappeared in an area where we had a series of problems, some burglaries not too much earlier. And he drove his car over there, saw the fellow, asked him to come over, and the fellow basically bolted. The officer attempted to pursue him. The fellow basically circled around, came behind the officer. The officer saw him again and then pursued again. Meanwhile, both the sergeant and I were en route at that point because he was calling in over as a pursuit. So this is one of those situations where the African student thought that he was being picked on because of his color, and the officers believed they were doing their job in ascertaining who this person was, why did he flee from the police. And in fact, flight is an indication that someone is doing something inappropriate or wrong. So it's one of those situations that is very difficult to resolve. Ultimately, I had a series of meetings with the people who this young man was staying with. In fact, that's even going on as we speak. But
to tell them what?
Well, we discussed the issue. They certainly believed that it was a racial matter. I don't believe it was a racial matter, but frankly, perception is more important than reality these days. So I've invited the woman who the young man is staying with to speak at an upcoming Citizens Police Academy, and that should be happening sometime this September or October, and she can discuss various issues about how police comport themselves with people of color. And it should be an interesting discussion.
Now, this is the kind of misunderstanding that in a large city could really get out of control. I'm wondering if you think that there's different ways of addressing it in a small town, things that you couldn't do if you were in New York?
Well, I certainly have put in a lot of time on this. I learned a great deal because one of the problems that I've discovered after speaking to a fairly large number of African Americans is their perception of how the police interact with them. And I really hadn't given it much thought, frankly. But for instance, the issue of racial profiling, it's less a matter of whether, in fact, it exists or not, but the fact that there's a large population of Americans of color who think that, in fact, it does exist. So the burden, I think, falls on the police to deal with the matter. And one of the points that I make to fellow officers is that we have a very, very large population of middle class and upper middle class people of color in this country, that they're politically powerful, which I think is important, and that they have to be listened to. Not listening to that group would be akin to not listening to a large group of white middle class people who had some grievance with the police. And it's an issue that has to be addressed. The question is, what's the best way to do it? And I think we're struggling with that question right now.
Is there anything you miss about being a cop in New York City?
I miss, there was quite a bit of adventure there. I did some interesting things. Homicide was an interesting line of work. Robbery squad going after heavily armed robbery teams got the old adrenaline going. And of course, flying helicopters for the NYPD had its moments. But I think as a trade-off, I'm living a very high quality of life. My wife enjoys it. I enjoy the people that I work with, and I'm not at all sorry that I made that kind of a decision.
Has your physical health changed since moving to Wellfleet from New York?
My wife commented that when I was a homicide detective, we were a fairly busy unit. We weren't the busiest in the Bronx, but perhaps we'd have 75, 80 homicides for the small squad that worked out of our area. And it's amazing what human beings will do to other human beings. And after you've done enough homicide investigation examining crime scenes and seeing enough battered bodies, it does have an impact on you. And I think it caused me to become quite jaded and unemotional. And I think that since coming to Wellfleet, I've since kind of relaxed and not had such a hard shell. I think I've opened up a bit.
Which is hard to do as a cop, probably.
It is, for a whole bunch of reasons. Understand that when we get to the scene of an emergency, the last group of people you want to see upset are your public safety responders, whether they be EMS, fire, or police. There could be mayhem around these people, and you want them to comport themselves in a professional, unhurried, unexcited way. And so you've got to train yourself that regardless of what you're seeing, regardless of who's screaming around you, you must do certain things, and you must do it in a certain order. Anything else, and you're not serving the public. But what it does, it does have an impact on your psyche as a human being.
Well, Richard Rosenthal, thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Richard Rosenthal is the chief of police in Wellfleet on Cape Cod. His new memoir about working undercover with the NYPD is called Rookie Cop, Deep Undercover in the Jewish Defense League. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.